the Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm here with Flash.
What up? Did you play the sound effect? I am once again, team not hearing the soundboard.
I totally played them. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's going to be a good one today. We are fresh. There is just a bunch of fresh news out there. Today, we are talking about these new Commander brackets, which if you guys remember maybe a couple episodes ago, we were a little unhinged in our criticism, like where the hell are the brackets? And now they're here. We're so excited to talk about them today. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube. Oh, almost forgot. This is the Mock Stars Podcast, number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. 23 crisp flavors. I even have a fresh can of Dr. Pepper Blackberry in my hands. So we can finally update the rankings, Flash. This is a monumental moment for the show.
Are you going to about to taste this live in this episode?
Correct. I have not tasted it yet. So, shoot. Yeah, that's one of our pregame actions.
It's huge stuff happening.
Huge. All right. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also support us on all major podcasting platforms, or you can leave us a 5-star review. Make us look super duper cool, especially heading into MagicCon Chicago. I booked the flight, got the hotel, meeting up with some buddies, and we're gonna jam some games. So make us look super duper cool, leave us a 5-star review, and come play some games at MagicCon Chicago with me, Menace. I have a list of decks I'm bringing. I'm super excited. I'm gonna have the new artifact variant of Shalai and Halar, my Helga deck, which I top 16 with. I am building a new custom MTG, like I'm bedabbling and creating custom cards. I'm bringing a new custom commander deck. And then I'm bringing Xeris, Storm, and a new mono red CDH build, Ashling. Do you know Ashling?
The name sounds familiar, but
so I
couldn't actually place it.
It's from Modern Horizons 3. It's a mythic from the set. And I gotta say, pretty much every single card from Modern Horizons 3, the rarity was pretty much on point. Like, if it's a mythic, it's for a reason, right? Maybe Emrakul was the only one, because it's not as good as everyone thought, or at least as good as I thought. But Ashling Flame Dancer is 2 and 2 red. It is one of the cheapest cards in the set. It is like $3 to get a copy. And is a elemental shaman. Ashling is a character that has shown up 2 times before this, I believe. But it's a 4/4 that says you do not lose unspent red mana as steps and phases end. And then it has...
Okay, yes. I've seen this card.
Yeah. And the Magecraft ability is crazy. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, discard a card, then draw a card. That's any time. It isn't just the first time. It's any time. And then if this is the second time this ability is resolved this turn, Ashling deals 2 damage to each opponent and each creature they control. If it's the third time, add 4 red mana. Woo! Yeah. Good stuff. Real good stuff. It's a fun deck. I've been kind of like, I didn't understand it right away, so I was asking a lot of questions to different people over here in the PNW, just like, how does this work? I see the list. I know, I know the cards. What is happening? And so we cleared it up, and I've been running some test hands. It is quick. It is a quick deck. And
can you go into deets on some of the tech?
Yeah. So basically, right, you have a Magecraft triggers, right? That's all you need is to be able to cast or copy an instant or sorcery to get the trigger to discard and draw a card. So you're running 2 Eldrazi Titans with Kozilek and Ulamog. And so basically, you run 2 forks, right? And the deck has something like 12 different forking effects. So what you do is, I know you're not supposed to swear. Hopefully, the algorithm doesn't, you know, pick up forking as a, maybe it's close, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, two forking effects, and you cast
pretty
one.
Pretty forking good.
Yeah, this is a pretty forking good deck. Cast one, and then cast another targeting itself, and then copy itself infinitely, right? And then you immediately loot through your entire library like that. And then that whole trigger starts where you're copying something infinitely, infinitely. And then you discard, draw, discard, draw, discard, draw, discard, draw, discard, draw. And then when you finally discard one of the Titans, it'll put your graveyard back in your library and you continue going through the loop. Now, this with a few things like Desperate Ritual, Seething Song will allow you to net infinite colored mana, and then you just kill the table with a lightning bolt since you're still drawing and discarding, and then those cards just end up in your graveyard. So land Ashling, as soon as you land Ashling, you should be winning the following turn. So the deck, yeah, it's like one of those red alarm, no pun intended for being mono red, but it just you're dropping Ashling. If it's for a value piece, you have to sell it. Because no one is going to buy it. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're gonna leave up a ton of interaction for you if you land it and try to go for the win the following turn. So it's a really cool deck. It definitely is, a Hellbent Glass Cannon type. So I'm excited to see where it goes. All the test hands have been playing it. It's been a really fun puzzle to figure out. So... yeah, that's Ashling. Super cool. You can also support us on Patreon, where you can become an official Pepperhead for $3 a month. $3 a month support the show, become an official Pepperhead, and have your name become Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. You can also support us at the 2-liter tier, like UWP Quirt, Definitely Jeremy, and Pool Boy Barry. Thank you all for your support. That is $10 a month. That'll get you access to the card of the week videos on the Patreon platform. Still catching up on those. I got a couple more to do this week. Card of the week. I think I know what I want to talk about. Card of the week, Bright Glass Gear Hulk from the new set.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, this card is crazy. And I know people are looking at it like two green, two white. Why would I consider playing that in CEDH? I think it has room. I think there's room for it. So the ability to be able to tutor two artifact, creature, or enchantment cards with mana value one or less. I'll go into it in the video, but I think Bright Glass Gear Hulk, there's a place for it. It's a mythic for a reason. Let's dive in. So you can check out the Card of the Week video on the Patreon platform by signing up for the 2-liter tier or above, where Ravenlift is hanging out in the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge with some Dr. Pepper Blackberry. I can only assume we now have it on tap over there. The world has access to it. And there, the Tasmanian Devil has been chugging it day after day. He's having it for brunch, man. This stuff, I can't wait to taste it. I'm so excited. Flash.
Yo.
Any thoughts before? What do you imagine this Dr. Pepper Blackberry tastes like?
Heaven itself.
Heaven.
Just liquid heaven.
Okay. Here we go. Wow. Crisp. You guys remember that review we read on the show before, and it definitely got me excited, got me hot and bothered. So here we go, tasting live. Whoa! Oh my God! Oh man! Wow. Whoa. That's power. That is pure power. That is a different take on Dr. Pepper. So many thoughts. Where does this get ranked? Okay, so let me break it down for you, Flash. Did you ever have Mountain Dew Pitch Black?
I have not.
No, okay. Because it is very blackberry-y. Like, it's definitely got a lot of, it's like very fruit-forward. The Dr. Pepper is just hiding. It's like the Dr. Pepper's there, but it is like hiding in the shadows, just silently supporting the blackberry, which is front and center stage. It's like America's Got Talent, and the Dr. Pepper is Terry Crews, and the blackberry is the golden buzzer winner on stage. For any of you who knows how, I don't know how that show totally works. I think that's how it works. But star of the show, Blackberry, right up front. And Terry Crews is in the back like, what? Oh, my God, he's so talented. Yeah. And I was saying, it's like if you've ever had listeners, if you've ever had Mountain Dew Pitch Black, it's like that flavor where it was, I don't know, it was just a different type. I don't know. It's what it reminds me of. It is popping. It really pops. Right. It's just right up front. It kicks you right in the teeth. Man. Flash, you got to get one of these. This is crazy.
I'm going to track one down.
Yeah. It's so different. It's so different from, like, even the strawberries and cream one. Like, you can still pick the Dr. Pepper out. This one, you definitely have to look. You got to look for it. So I can see where a lot of Dr. Pepper fans might be a little off put about it, but you definitely got to, like, it's there sitting in the back. All right. That rankings, man, where does that go? It's not like I would have to drink a bunch of it to really determine whether or not I am going to put this next to the OG. I think right now this is like my number three. It's more exciting than strawberries and cream. Pops harder. It's brighter. That's all I got for you. All right. Today, we are diving in to the newest news that news has ever newsed. It is the Commander Bracket System. It is an article published by Gavin Verhey on February 11th. They're introducing, finally, this what the tier system that you will be using, the bracket system, that you'll be using to determine whether or not the table is an appropriate place for your deck. So I'm excited to see this at MagicCon Chicago. Obviously, when it was published the other day, yesterday, or day before, it was listed as, it's called the Commander Brackets Beta, which is perfect. I like that they called it a beta. It is definitely not a finished product. So I am excited to see where this goes moving forward. But yeah, they have to start somewhere. They have to create something in order for us to take steps forward. So first impressions. Wow. Since this is primarily like we talk CEDH, and it says here, bracket 5, CEDH. We weren't promised a fifth bracket. If I remember right, when they were initially pitching this concept, it was going to be a four bracket system, right? Like they were going to have, like all the way up, and then there'd be cards that are placed within each bracket depending. And if you had those cards in your list, then you would meet the, different requirements, whatever. We got a fifth tier, CEDH. Now this is where my first criticism comes in. And let's just get these out of the way. It's constructive. And Gavin Verhey, I know you're listening to this. Otherwise, you wouldn't have felt the pressure to publish the Commander brackets because, you know, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, and he's like, ah, man, you're right. We got to get these out here. We got to get the people informed. And
he had Commander brackets on a post-it note on his computer, and the post-it note fell down and he just forgot. And, you know, we mentioned it again on the podcast, and that, you know, got the ball rolling again.
Yep. Instigated the old memory palace. He's alive, and now the brackets are out there. They're in the world for all to see. And so the first bit of constructive criticism is that tier 4 and tier 5 are this exact same. If you've seen these, which they're on screen on YouTube, where you can check us out, support the show, the Mock Stars podcast, number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. You can see that the bracket number 4 is called Optimized. It says High Power Commander, it's time to go wild. And then it says underneath, no restrictions other than the ban list. And then tier 5, or bracket 5, CEDH, high power with a very competitive and metagame focused mindset. No restrictions other than the ban list. So it's a behavioral difference between the two, which is left to be interpreted by, I don't know. I don't know who. That's the first criticism is just like, I think we need a little bit more separation between it to figure out what is a 5 and what is a 4. And the crazy part is that when you go into Moxfield now, all of your decks should be updated with the brackets. So you can go through and you can scroll through your decks and it'll tell you, oh, that's a bracket 4 deck. Oh, that's a bracket 4 deck. Oh, what? That's a bracket 2 deck. I have never made a bracket 5 deck pretty much ever.
You have to consider the meta and not play Jank.
Yeah.
That, right?
Like, I just scrolled through and I found out I do have one, but it's not even 100 cards. I was just throwing together a Taom list, and it's a bracket 5. Probably because Taom is a meta commander at the moment. So I don't know what it takes to like really surpass the limit. If it's a matter of mindset that differs between the two, then it's hard to really like classify tier 4 versus tier 5. Bracket 4. I just have tier stuck in my head. It's brackets. All right, but if you're unfamiliar with the brackets, I should have started with this. Bracket 1 is Exhibition, your ultra-casual commander deck. You can't have any mass land denial or extra turns, no two-card infinite combos, and no game changers, which we will get into game changers and what that means. And you can have a few tutors. So you have few tutors compared to other cards. Taking a step up, you have your core decks in bracket 2, the average current pre-constructed deck. So pre-cons are tier 2 automatically. Bracket 2, I swear to God, if I say tier again. No mass land denial, no chaining extra turns, no two-card infinite combos, no game changers, and few tutors. The only difference here is you can take extra turns, you just can't chain them together. Cool. That's a very nuanced decision between 2 and 1. Bracket 3, upgraded. Beyond the strength of an average precon, no mass land denial, no chaining extra turns, late game 2-card infinite combos are allowed, and you can have 3 game changers. And then 4 and 5 we already talked about. So that is your bracket system at the moment.
I gotta say, just first impression, if you don't mind, is that instead of power ranking 1 through 10, this is, and like 1 through 10, those numbers really not hard representing anything, but only representing vibes. I feel like what these brackets do is just consolidate that down to 5 different vibes.
Yes.
With a little more distinction, but still the difference between CDH and like bracket 4 is like super, is just, it's a conversation still, essentially.
You know how like you hear something for the first time and you go, that it perfectly explains every situation relating to this ever. And you're right. It's a vibe check, right? Like power was like saying, oh, it's 1 through 10 or whatever. It's a 7, right? That's a vibe check. It's not a, like, what is in your deck? It's like, how are you going to pursue, like, basically, what's your attitude with this deck? Is it a 7 out of 10 and you're going to play it that way? Like, perfect, right? Like, I didn't really think about it in that way. But you could totally bring a precon and say it's a 7 because you're going to play aggressively or whatever. So, this definitely is, it just takes it and it says, instead of 10, you now have 5. And everything's a 3. You know, like, it does give you the opportunity to sort of like draw a line between 3 and 4 with the 3 mm-hmm. game changers, you know, because that is like a, now we have a quantity of certain cards that are allowed in a deck before it crosses a line. With every bracket, we see, you know, like there are certain lines that are drawn between them, like Exhibition being weaker than a precon, no extra turns whatsoever. Very, you know, and then you have very few tutors. 2 is like, oh, you can take extra turns, but, you know, so there's a little bit of a line, right? Where it's like, but you can't chain extra turns together. So there are certain commanders that come off the table for that. You know, like if I play 1 extra turn spell, basically, oh, yeah. So if you play 1 extra turn spell, you're immediately in core 2 or you're in bracket 2. And then you go to 3. And then, yeah. And then as soon as you add a game changer to your deck, it becomes a 3. So,
I mean, I think it makes sense. Like, I wasn't saying that they cleaned it up to 5 different vibes as like a pejorative thing. I mean that like it just made the conversation easier.
Yeah,
like, I think this is a lot more clear than 1 through 10.
Absolutely.
Right? This is like 1. Everyone's just hanging out, not even trying to win the game. Here are things that indicate that. 2 is basically pre-cons. 3, you've started tuning. You're not like hardcore trying to win the game. You're still mostly there for the hang. Here's some things that signify that you have started tuning your deck. And then 4 is like, hey, this is super duper optimized. Here's all the things that indicate that, which obviously you can look at, like, they call them game changers, but it's basically like CDH staples. How many of the CDH staples are you playing in your deck at this point? Is it 10% CDH staples? That's 4.
Probably a 4.
5 is CDH.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think that's so much more clear than just, like, somebody you have never met before telling you to trust them that they were playing a power level 6.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking through my list, and I remember I made a Marisi combat control deck. Like, this is way back, right? And it was ranked as a 3, right? Like, an upgraded deck. And I went through the list, and the only thing that made it a 3 was a Smothering Tithe. And I don't know, for all you listeners out there, I'm a pretty talented deck builder. So I was just thinking, man, if I just take that Smothering Tithe out of there, I could just go pub stomp a 2. I could just go pub stomp a 2 table and say, yep, this is a 2.
See, but that's the thing, like, you know,
trust the stranger. Changers,
I don't know. Maybe the game changers need weighted values, because obviously,
yes, they do.
Like a Rhystic Study is much better than a Smothering Tithe, and a Rhystic Study is good in all 5 of these levels, right?
Exactly.
Whereas a Smothering Tithe is really only going to be a game changer at the 4 or 5 level.
Right. When decks start to value card draw. I think that's where, yeah,
like you throw a Smothering Tithe in the second level, the pre-con level, and it's not going to do anything. It's definitely not going to change the game.
It gets you one treasure for each player, maybe, you know, but then the game's going slow enough where you could probably pay the tax.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that's the whole reason that Smothering Tithe never flourished in Standard, was because it was just like, oh, a 4-mana investment that, yeah, I'll pay two. I'll pay two, whatever. You know, it's like why when you're playing on Arena and you're like in Brawl and someone drops an Esper Sentinel, it's like, cool, I'll pay the one.
Like, yeah,
yeah, it's like pretty ridiculous, you know? So like, yeah, I can see that where different power levels sort of, yeah, like you said, weighted value to certain game changers. So let's get into what the game changers are. So right off the bat, we have white.
It seems like some colors have more game changers than others.
They do.
Sure.
They do. And I have a couple that I think, you know, like there definitely needs to be a few added to the list, you know, that I feel like we're just overlooked a little bit. But right away, we have white. We have Dranith Magistrate, Enlightened Tutor, Sarah's Sanctum, Smothering Tithe, Trouble in Pairs. That, it's really curious what signifies a game changer. It's almost like I saw on Reddit someone was saying, oh, so they just copy and pasted the salt index from EDH Rec, which are all the...
I mean, kind of. I mean, if you look at it, the lower tiers are focused on just, you know, the social aspect
good
of the
vibe
game and it just being fun and like not causing salt. And there's such an emphasis on like no mass land destruction, you know?
Yeah, right. And like right here, I think a game changer would be like, and I think Gavin addressed this at some point in the article. If you'd like to read the article, you can check it out. I'll leave the link in the description of the video on YouTube. You can check it out there. But yeah, he goes through and he says,
you know,
this is a beta test. That's what he says pretty much right away. And then he's like, cards that regularly end up destroy, exile, or bounce other lands or whatever is what is an example of mass land denial. And then lists off like Armageddon, Ruination, Sunder, Winter Orb, whatever, things like that.
Because even like looking at this list, like, you know, related to it just being like about the unfun aspect, just like jumping ahead to blue and black, like Jin-Gitaxis Core Augur and Tegrid, God of Fright aren't necessarily cards that you're going to see in CDH.
Pretty
right?
Pretty much never.
But at lower levels, if somebody like drops one of those and it's just, you know, it's just going to be a burden on the table.
Absolutely. Right. Anything two or less. That's why there's a line drawn like there. I think that
even
is
like
wise
in the multicolor too, like Grand Arbiter, Augustin the Fourth. Like, that's why that card is there, because it's just unfun. It taxes the game.
Yeah. Yep. And then so, yeah, white Dranith is another reason. You know, it's like right there, nobody can play their commander. So you play that at a one or a two, it's like, yeah, it destroys the vibe. Like there is no fun.
Everything in white makes sense. Like Dranith prevents you from playing your commander. That's what the format resolves around. Like Enlightened Tutor is a super strong 1-mana tutor. Sarah's Sanctum is a huge mana accelerator. Smothering Tithe, we already discussed. Trouble in Pairs is another like super, like at higher levels, super tuned card advantage engine. You know, that all makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not gonna I'm not gonna let the Boston accent slip right there. The Tuda. You're right. It all makes sense. The Trouble in Pairs is definitely like a newer card that has definitely turned into a staple in white decks.
Yeah, I mean, Trouble in Pairs, I think, is a better card than Smothering Tithe.
Right. Ooh.
But it's the same deal where it's really only going to pop off for you at higher levels.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It only benefits you the more that people are casting spells, attacking with creature, drawing cards, blah 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 blah. Yeah, I agree. In blue, you have Cyclonic Rift, Expropriate, Force of Will, Fierce Guardianship, Rhystic Study, Thassa's Oracle, Urza, Lord High Artificer, Mystical Tutor, and it's funny enough. I was gonna put a catch all, but it's not. I was going to say that all of the one mana tutors are on this list, but they're not. Blue.
You don't have Gamble on here.
No Gamble.
You don't have Worldly Tutor.
Exactly. No Worldly Tutor. I was so curious about those two. But so here in blue, obviously Cyclonic Rift, very much a salty card that is one sided at one point. We were saying that, you know, it is probably the best board wipe in CEDH. It's, you know, but that was before Dockside was banned. I've seen it so much like less. It's not as often that you see Cyclonic Rift. It's not like an auto include anymore. People would rather just interact with you on the stack so that counter spells are more important.
Well, I mean,
important.
Cyclonic Rift was great because treasure tokens are permanents, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you just push them all back. You crack your mana now. Yeah. So, blue, black, we have Bolas the Citadel, Demonic Tutor, Imperial Seal, Opposition Agent, Turgrid, Vampiric Tutor, and Ad Nauseam.
Ad Nauseam, I think Gavin explains a little more in the article, like, why Ad Nauseam is on there and Necropotence isn't. It's just like Ad Nauseam, you can just draw a billion cards and just win the game on the spot. Versus Necropotence, you need a little more build around. It's you know, there's just a little more to it.
Yeah, and the build around for Ad Nauseam is just playing the best cards in the game.
Yeah.
So Necropotence definitely requires more support than just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Red. And then, you know, you see there, like, Opposition Agent, obviously not a super, super powerful card, right? Like, that's a card that we've seen in CDH sort of fade in and out occasionally, but it is a card that prevents your opponent from playing their cards and like doing the things they want to do and like, you know, does some unfun things.
It's a good
same deal as like Tegrid that like sort of pushes that over the edge into like, let's try to not have people at lower levels playing this card.
Yeah, I think Opposition Agent is a really great place to draw the line where it, you know, like, immediately, as soon as you put Opposition Agent, yeah, you're going into three. You are like, there are certain cards that I think on other channels, like, let's say, like Game Nights, those guys, when they do their podcast episodes, they talk about certain cards that take your deck up a power level. Like, I think this is where that is where the line is drawn. That's what these game changers do. An Opposition Agent is one that if you're in black, you put it in your deck, there is intention to stifle strategies. So there it is. Like, it is impacting the vibe, so to speak.
Yes. Opposition Agent, I think it just demonstrates an intention, right?
Yeah.
Like, there is no excuse at lower levels at where you're trying to have fun for playing an Opposition Agent. There's not like a fun way to play it.
No, they're definitely gatekeeping a certain type of person from participating in tier two and below. Red, we have Jessica's Will and Underworld Breach. The Jessica's Will is definitely one of the better rituals we've seen in Magic in the last four or five years, ever since it came out in 2020. So,
although I will say the red section seems like in the absence of Dockside, they're just trying to have some red representation on this list.
Because Underworld Breach, like, yes, we get it. It is part of one of the most efficient ways to win the game in CDH, but it requires additional setup, Line's Eye Diamond, Brain Freeze, a couple other things.
And it's
not
going to change the vibe of the game at any of the lower levels if someone Underworld Breaches, you know?
Exactly.
Without some of the other game changers already being involved.
Yeah, I had a laugh at this, like, at Red. They're like, Jessica's Will, you could argue that, you know, no.
Even Jessica's Will, like, it's not... most of the time, I think at the lower levels, it's probably not going to impact you that much.
No, because it only gives you red mana. Like, if it was like, gives you any color of mana equal to the number of cards in opponent's hand, you know, it's like, boom, that's a crazy, you know. But like, I do think that it is, they definitely wanted some representation. They're just, Underworld Breach just isn't good enough on its own. To like some of these other cards are, like we talked about, Smothering Tithe. On its own, it's great. It just does enough on its own. Trouble in Pairs, same deal. Underworld Breach, we get it. I get it. It's scary name. Scary name for a card. All right. Green. Survival of the Fittest, Vorinclex, Voice of Hunger, Gaia's Cradle. I think they're, so along with red, I do think there are also some more cards in green that can be put on here because...
Yeah, I mean, Birthing Pod maybe, right?
Yeah, yes. Like, thank like you. Like,
Food Chain, like, those cards are really only there for... I guess...
Bro, when
they
I...
both have, you know, Timmy-type interactions at lower levels, but most... They're a part of two-card combos, right?
Yes. Food Chain absolutely should be on here. Like, that was... One of the things I looked at as I was like going through my list, my Food Chain lists, were like some of them were popping up as tier three. And I was like, what? And then I looked and like Food Chain and Squee and like all of the other Cast from Exile cards are not considered game changers. That just shocked me. So you can literally run an infinite Food Chain. Like that's the thing about tier three is it doesn't say no infinites. It just says like no two card. I can't remember. Late game, two card combos. So as long as I assemble Food Chain late in the game, I'm okay. Yeah. So I think Food Chain deserves to be here. Another one and another maybe section of cards that I believe deserves to be on here. Like obviously Worldly Tutor was missing from here. And in red, I think Gamble also deserves to be in there. If we're talking about Underworld Breach being a standalone, you know, in there, Gamble deserves to be there. Worldly Tutor belongs here, but the finale of Devastation type effects should absolutely be here.
I mean, but that's another thing where it's just like kind of a Timmy card as well.
But it's like the ceiling of the card is like the, like, especially for finale of Devastation. If there's one to pick, I think it's that, or it's Court of Calling. So like, because Court of Calling at instant speed is a bit different and having Convoke. So I don't think Green Sun Zenith necessarily deserves to be there since it's so limited in scope, especially if you're at those lower power levels. What, you know, if you're late in the game and you spend 8 mana to pull out your Crater Hoof Behemoth, or you spend 9 mana, right? Green and 8 to get your Crater Hoof out with a Green Sun Zenith, you should win the game. But 9 mana should win you the game a lot of the time. You know, so those are the type of cards where I think Court of Calling and Finale Devastation could and should be considered for green, along with Food Chain, along with Worldly Tutor. Let's see. Other, I thought they were going to put Birds of Paradise on here, to be honest.
No, I mean, like, I think putting any, there's no mana dork that I think is so OP that you got to throw it on this list.
Deathrite Shaman?
Ooh. No.
Because it just kills off certain strategies.
Really, like, you need to be playing at higher levels to generate the value out of that to make that card into a one mana planeswalker. You know what I mean?
But then no fetch lands are considered in any of these brackets.
Yeah, I mean, that's
or
fair.
Dual lands. Like, you can play fetches and duels all you want. There are a few things here where you could, like, you could sit here all day and pick out the nuance and be like, yeah, this, like, what about fetch lands? What about dual lands? What about certain land destruction effects or tutors, whatever?
I mean, it's a beta list.
Exactly.
So and we'll get there.
Yeah.
Hey, multicolor. I think there's no questions here.
Kanan,
Yuriko, Winota, right? That all seems obvious.
Yeah, Grand Arbiter. It's basically...
What about does Najeela belong in that list?
Well, what I was going to say is that these Commanders. That's what they are. They're not. Yeah, you could put them in the 99. Sure. Kinnan most likely in the 99. But this is their way of saying this is banned as commander in anything one or two. There's no way you can build a one or a two as a with Kinnan.
Yeah.
There's no way you can build a one or two with Yuriko. There's no way you can build a one or two with Winota or Grand Arbiter. So I think this is a great way to break ground on that classification that they've definitely people have been clamoring for like years, because they used to have it and they don't anymore. They used to have banned as commander. So now we're seeing it in a different form. Banned in certain brackets. Boom. Multicolor. Korvold could be here if you wanted. I think that's another one. But yeah, no questions here right off the bat. I think this list is actually pretty small.
Yeah.
Colorless. We have Ancient Tomb, Chrome Mox, The One Ring, Tabernacle at Pendril Vale, Trinisphere, Grim Monolith, Lion's Eye Diamond, Mox Diamond, Mana Vault, and Glacial Chasm.
I think, again, no questions here. Like, it fits very neatly into the category of, like, these are cards that are really just OP that you're only going to be playing if you're trying to be very competitive or they make the game deeply unfun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Everything like Lion's Eye Diamond, it has intention. Like if you're playing it, you're playing it with something else that pushes it further. Mox Diamond and Chrome Mox, same deal, right? Like
I got to say this list overall, like I know we've nitpicked some stuff, but like, good job, Gavin. I think this is a good reflection of the intent between the different levels of play, right?
Yep.
There are some cards that maybe we feel could drop off, cards that should probably be on here. But overall, I think this does, like, you know, it articulates it well, what the difference between the levels is going to be.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. The thing is that you don't need to do it all in one go. You can do it in multiple steps, baby steps, so to speak. Like, you can add a card to it tomorrow that someone reminded you about, and you're like, you know what? You're right. That is a game changer. I'll add that.
Well, when is the first possible unbanning supposed to be? In a couple months, right? They're looking at April to reevaluate the ban list.
Yep. He's like, now to be clear, most of these cards are unlikely to be banned. You shouldn't go trading away your guy's cradle. However, it is a clear signal for players to know that these cards indicate a different kind of play, a different style of play, and the others might not prefer to play against them. We all discussed a lot what we felt like should make the list, but to make it useful but manageable, and ended up at exactly 40 cards. The list is, you know, it's just a coincidence. It doesn't always have to be 40 cards. There aren't just going to be 40 game changers all the time. Things aren't going to leave.
Well,
and come
also
back.
I do think that the game changer list does need to be pretty tight. You know, you can't have 100 cards on this list because then it just unclarifies it.
Yes. Like I was saying earlier in the episode, that my one criticism between like bracket 4 and bracket 5, I think we need more representation in the CDH from the CDH community in order to what I would like to see is, while there are very clear lines drawn between like tier 1, there are no extra turns. Tier 2, you can have extra turns, but you can't chain them together. Tier 3 involves game changers, so there's lines drawn between them. Tier 4, whatever you want, man, and you can have any number of anything, right? And then there needs to be a line, and someone, the representative from the CDH community, needs to be able to draw that line and say, it's not just a behavioral difference. There's something there that creates, it makes it a 5. So that's my only thing. Otherwise, I think it's a really great start. This is excellent. I'm excited to run into Gavin at MagicCon and touch base and be like, hey, nice work, dude. Nice freaking work. And if you're listening to this, what's up, Gavin? Hello. Flash, say hello.
Yay.
Nice.
I did it.
You did it. All right. Final thoughts going as we exit the conversation?
No, I think this is actually, you know, there is perhaps a tendency in this community and on this podcast to have a pessimistic outlook on how things will go.
No, we don't.
There was a lot of shit talking, trash talking.
I did do that.
Surrounding the original announcement of this.
I did do that.
From all around. A lot of skepticism. But this is a pretty good start. I think this is a very strong start. I think taking it from 10 arbitrary numbers to 5 more defined categories that still give some room for Rule Zero conversations is a great move. Like, it, you know, 5 categories is manageable. Like, I think it's very obvious what the distinctions are, except for maybe at the distinction between optimized and CDH. Like, is that just off meta versus meta, essentially?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little fuzzy, but still, it's better than 1 through 10. What the hell does that mean? And then the game changers thing, you know, obviously some cards that we can talk about need to be on there or don't make sense on that list. But, like, I think it's pretty straightforward. I think it makes it a lot more clear what kind of pod you're going to be in with this format versus power level.
Yeah, it all comes down to trusting strangers. And that was even a problem at MagicCon, right, where you had huge convention floor. And everyone is like, they have these little signs that you take to your table saying what kind of experience you're looking for. Basically, a vibe check sign, you know, casual, refined, competitive, high power, you know, like, I can't remember all of them, what they all said or whatever. But yeah, it was just like the vibe check was often misinterpreted by some players. And so now I think it is valuable to have a clear expectation with numbers and brackets. It's great. And the game changer, I think it is it the whole thing by design is incredibly clever. And I think we're just going to see it evolve and it's going to grow. And while you might see something and your first response is, ick, I don't like that or whatever, just going to take time to grow. Like, it's just got to give also, it time.
Yeah. Also, once this is like fully articulated, we're going to start seeing, because it's now a Wizards of the Coast driven thing rather than like an independently driven thing. In the pre-cons, it's going to come in with a little card or an instruction booklet that says, hey, these are the different commander power levels. Like, you have you're in bracket number 2 right now. Here's how you can take it to this bracket or this bracket or this bracket.
Yep.
When you play the game and you're finding people to play the game with, this is how you find like-minded players for a like-minded experience.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great way to, like, I think Pokemon did it really well, and Pokemon continues to do it really well, where when you go out and you buy a deck, they have a 3-tier system, right? Where if you go out and the pre-con you buy has 3 Pokeballs, that means that was a world tournament deck. And so that is a competitive deck. That is a card, or that is a deck that is built to function. And then you can get a 2, which is like, hey, this is, you know, a refined deck, but won't be winning any tournaments. And then you have a 1, which is like, this is for hanging out with your pals and having a good time, playing with your favorite Pokemon in this deck. You know, and that's like what we're seeing now. And I hope to see on products moving forward with the pre-cons is that, like, I know that they put in the tier list, like, hey, this is your standard pre-con level. Average current pre-constructed deck is Core 2 or is bracket two. I would like to see on packaging being like, this is a two. This is a three.
Yeah.
We can now sell fours.
Definitely. It opens up different revenue streams for Wizards where, like, I think, you know, because previously the distinction between the precons, there were like premium precons, but that was like set dependent. Right.
Right.
MH3 had premium precons, like your standard set just has regular precons. Now, I think going forward in a year from now, it probably won't be like, hey, every set comes out and there's four precons and they're all the same power level. We might see something like there's four precons plus four premium precons that are double or triple the price.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, like, you're appealing.
There's the precon, then the tuned version of the precon for a little bit extra.
Yeah,
a bit extra.
You have these markets you're appealing to as a company, right? You have your standard, modern, pioneer players, and then you have your massive base of commander players, and now you have the tool to be able to appeal to different sections of that market by saying, we're selling you a two, we're selling you a three, we're selling you a four, and the price will be reflective of that. So that's just probably that is a projection of the future and product lines that you can see. But overall, I think it's a great move for Commander. And yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes. That's what I can chalk it up to at the moment. I got to say, this Dr. Pepper Blackberry really is, it's growing on me, dude.
It set the tone for the episode, you know?
Yeah, I came in with that energy. I was so excited to taste it.
Do you think that if you hadn't drank that Blackberry Dr. Pepper, you would have been less complimentary of this list and the format changes?
Am I always that pessimistic?
No, I'm just saying, like, do you think it just, like, you know, sometimes it was just like a mood changer.
Yeah.
Like, it really just set the tone.
The flavor definitely brightened me up, man. I was like, I might have not seemed so impressed in the recording. I'll have to go back and listen. But I was excited to get into this. And maybe that did brighten up my mood a little bit. So, yeah, I think it'll brighten up my day every day that I drink one.
Put a little pepper in your stepper.
Woo! All right. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. For $3 a month, become an official Pepperhead. Have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. You can also support us at the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier. It's $5 a month, like Maybe Anthony, KB, Mono Greg, Will Rule, K Mr. K, D Mun 82, Tommy Cypher, and Jacob Hibbard. Thank you all for your support. We also have, this week is one of our bi-weekly giveaways. Joining the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier gets you an entry into each of those bi-weekly giveaways. By becoming a 2-liter supporter, you get 2 entries. And by becoming while gaining access to the Dr. Pepper Mockstars Lounge, like Revenlift, you get 3 entries into each of our bi-weekly giveaways. So stay tuned to the end of the show, and we'll spin the wheel to see who wins this week's giveaway. All right. I'm excited to see where this goes. More than anything, I'm excited. And, you know, I meant to ask you this earlier, Flash. I still haven't watched the movie Tar. Can you tell me what it's about?
It is about a brilliant conductor who abuses their power.
Hmm.
And it's also about Monster Hunter.
A conductor of a train or an orchestra?
Orchestra.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was about to be a train conductor in the Monster Hunter world. But an orchestra conductor, with Monster Hunter references. Okay. This has been the Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace. You are Flash.
Sure am.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Peace.
Bye.
All right. If you made it this far in the show, welcome to this week's bi-weekly giveaway. This week, I am giving away a collector's booster for Aether Drift. So let's see who spins. I spin the wheel. Let's see who wins this week's giveaway. Let's shuffle three times. One, two, three. And spin away. Let's go. Let's see who gets this sweet Aether Drift pack. Hopefully it has a gold Chromax. It's Will Rule. Congratulations, Will Rule. You have won yourself an Aether Drift Collector's Booster Pack. Hopefully it has something sweet in it. Obviously the cards are, well, it's a set. That's what we'll say. It's a set of cards. And hopefully you get a cool one in your new prize pack. Thank you all for supporting the show. Thank you so much for participating and being an official Pepperhead. Thank you so much. We will see you in 2 weeks for the next bi-weekly giveaway. Probably something cool that I will have acquired at MagicCon Chicago. Peace!